your reaction to Kyle Dubas's decision to more or less, at least on deadline day and in the couple days leading up, stand pat?
Well, I count the deal to get Campbell and Clifford that as a deadline deal. It's, you know, within 2 or 3 weeks of the deadline, I think there were lots of deals done in advance. So I don't think he did stand pat. And I think that was a critical trade for the Leafs. So I'm not a big deadline guy. You guys know that. I never did much at the deadline. I don't believe that it makes sense. I think teams overpay badly at the deadline. So I have no problem that they made the one big deal and then stood pat.
How close were they to getting a guy like Bogosian? And we know we got to see him last night for Tampa. We know the Sabres let him out of his contract and then obviously re-signs with the Lightning. Were they ever close, do you think, to kind of bringing him aboard, or was that a smart move not going in that direction?
Well, I really like Zach Bogosian, so I would say I don't know how close they got. I think my understanding is he was talking to teams he viewed as contenders, and not saying that the Leafs aren't. I don't think they're in that upper echelon of favorites, but I think he was going to try to go somewhere where we had a chance to get a ring, and I think that's why he picked Tampa. There were several teams involved.
Brian Burke is our guest from Sportsnet and Hockey Night in Canada. This is Leadoff, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Burke, you've stood up there and dealt with the media a number of times when you were running the Maple Leafs. And I thought, watching Kyle at about 4 o'clock on Monday afternoon, it was the first time that in that type of setting I sensed the shine had come off of all of this for him. And you're well aware of the ups and the downs. What do you think is going on in Kyle's mind, in the front office's collective minds, about the state of this team right now, especially coming off the week they had last week, 3 out of 4 games that I think we could term as regrettable?
Yeah, I think regrettable would be charitable. I think they were awful 3 times. And that's the biggest problem. If you're a GM and your team is performing like the arm on a seismograph, going up and down and up and down. I mean, they played the second Pittsburgh game, and I'm thinking, well, they sorted it out. They figured it out. They played a great game. And then they play Saturday night to get beat by a beer league goal. Even last night they went to Tampa and beat Tampa, who won like 12 in a row at home or something crazy. So I think that's the hardest part, is what team's going to show up in their next game. They don't know. And that's the frustration, I think. So I watched Kyle's performance, and I think he's an honest guy. And he tells you when he's talking. I would say it honestly, and you know exactly what I was thinking. He's trying to protect his team more than I used to, and you can hear the frustration and the pain in his voice. He's like, I don't really know what we have here.
And do you believe him when he says that, Berkey, or do you think? I mean, they're closer to this than any of the rest of us. Do you think they have a sense of where the problem or problems lie?
Yeah, I think they're starting to see that some of the things that people like me have been complaining about are quite real. And I guess what troubles me the most is watching the media pile on when they play poorly, when I feel Sportsnet has reported these issues in real time. You know, like we've gone right from the start, criticized the Nylander signing and how the roster is constructed, and applauding them when they deserve to be applauded. I really like the deal with LA, but I don't. I don't know. I really don't know what to expect when I turn on the TV and the Leafs are playing. I'm not sure what's going to happen. I'm not sure I'm going to see a really good hockey team play. And even though they hung on by their fingernails last night, they played a really good game and beat a really good team. But I have no idea who's going to show up in Florida.
The loss of Muzzin, Berkey, and I mean, we're still awaiting word on the diagnosis and therefore the prognosis of this injury. I mean, he blocks a shot with his hand. If this is worst-case scenario, Riley's down, CeCe's down. I mean, the attrition is just... They just got Muzzin back not long ago. I mean, the attrition on the back end is brutal.
Yeah, and it is brutal, and it's not. If he is hurt, I hope he's not. But if he is, if he's injured, and you've got him out and CeCe and Riley, that's. I don't think there's a team in the league that has 3 of their top 6 injured. That'd be devastating. Now, Riley and CeCe are both skating again, and they're not that far away, is my understanding. But, yeah, that would be a blow. I think Jake Muzzin's been terrific for this team.
Anderson played great last night. I don't think anyone even came close to, you know, his performance or even what he's meant to the team this year. You think Campbell will get into the game tomorrow night or mix in more, or is this just going to be a run Anderson right to the end?
I wouldn't run him right to the end. I think they have a couple back-to-backs left, and I think Campbell will get his chance. But unless Freddie wakes up today and feels terrible, I'd play him again. He was really good, I thought.
Brian Burke is with us, the post-trade deadline breakdown and talking Leafs. This is Leadoff, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. How disappointed were you for Joe Thornton, Brian? I mean, time is ticking here. He did make a cup final a few years ago with San Jose. They lost to Pittsburgh. To see Marlowe go to Pittsburgh, that's his close bud. I mean, they've been running buddies for the better part of 15 years. Marlowe's going to get that shot at the ring. Joe Thornton, not.
Well, I'm not sure I mean, you got to hear from Doug Wilson. I'm not sure what happened there. I heard ambivalent statements from Joe leading into the deadline that maybe it's time to go try and chase the cup, but maybe not. I mean, if he'd have gone into Doug Wilson and said, I want to go somewhere, Doug Wilson would have moved him. So I got to wait and hear Doug Wilson's side of the story. I'm not like poor Joe. I think I could tell you right now, if I'm the GM and I got Joe Thornton, who's been there forever. You know, Jesus was still a carpenter when they made that trade. If I go in and the player comes into me and says, I want to go to a contender, I'd say, write down the teams in order. Who do you think has the best chance? Who do you think has the second chance? Who do you think has the third best chance? And I'd move them to those teams. I'd call those teams in that order and try to move them. And you hear where Mark Bergevin took less to move Kobe because Kobe wanted to go to Washington. So Kovalchuk brought less to the Canadiens than he would have if he'd gone somewhere else. That's what you do with players that you're loyal to. So I'm not buying this. I'm not buying that poor Joe. I'm guessing that he wasn't clear at all on this, or the GM would have moved him. There's no way to stiff a guy like that.
Yeah, well, it's just that he expressed disappointment in not moving, but maybe he wasn't talking about Doug Wilson and the Sharks. Maybe he was just talking about the general situation. It was hard not to juxtapose Kenny Holland's comments around the Oilers scene with where the Maple Leafs were the other day. And Holland, Berkey said, look, these guys have grinded it out all season long. Our top dogs have been beasts for us. Our coaching staff, Dave Tippett, first-year staff, they've done a terrific job. We're right in the thick of this thing. I needed to step up and help this team. And he does it in a way that doesn't necessarily compromise the future, because a guy like Athanasiou is controlled for the next couple of years. What did you make of the Oilers' moves and Ken Holland's first foray at the trade deadline running the Oilers?
Well, I thought his comments were excellent. I thought his comments were inspirational. I felt like I was watching Patton or one of those movies where the general is exhorting the troops to greater efforts. I thought it was excellent. And he brought some help in. I'm not sold that these moves put them in any kind of guaranteed position where the playoffs or not. If you watch the trade deadline show, I was kind of lukewarm on the players involved here. But I think the notion, as I said on TV, if you're Connor McDavid and you've watched guys pack their bags and leave the last few years, to watch someone walk in with an equipment bag is refreshing. And I think that the message to the players was loud and clear that we're rewarding you, we believe in you, we think you can make the playoffs, and maybe this gives us enough ammo to maybe win around. I thought it was great. I thought it played out fantastic.
When you look at and I'm asking specifically about the Western-based Canadian teams, do you like all three to sneak in? I mean, Vegas is on a bit of a heater here now, and they're leading the Pacific Division. Vancouver, Edmonton, and Calgary are all going to be in the conversation. The problem is, Berkey, you can have a bad week and suddenly find yourself 2-4 to maybe 6 points out of a playoff spot.
For sure. And it's going to be that way right till the end. I'm not confident that all three will get in. I'm not confident that I'm not counting Winnipeg out, but I think their schedule is really tough. The success story for me, or the two success stories, we all thought Calgary was going to be good, and they are. But the two success stories from Western Canada are Vancouver and Edmonton. Nobody picked them to be in the playoff picture, let alone be battling for first place in the division in March almost. So to me, you look at what they've accomplished in Vancouver with brilliant goaltending, and now we'll see if they can sustain it with an injury to Markstrom. But you look at what they've done both places, it's remarkable. It's amazing. And I think they're both for real. I think both teams can play that way right till the end.
What is your understanding of the situation in Minnesota with Zach Parise? I mean, Mike Russo, the longtime beat reporter there in St. Paul, now writing for The Athletic, detailed an effort to move Parise, and perhaps that he had waived his no-move clause last summer to facilitate a trade, or at least was approached about doing that. That trade didn't end up coming to fruition. They got close with the New York Islanders here, Berkey. How many times can you go to this well with a guy and ask him to waive only to have something like this fall through?
Well, he's asked for a trade, is my understanding. Zach has played for me before with the U.S. team. I had him in the Olympics. I had him in the World Cup. I mean, he's a wonderful young man. But my understanding is it's all initiated from a trade request from him. Okay. So it's not how many times can you go to the well and ask him to waive it. If he asked me, if he said I want to trade it, then you have to wipe it out. I'm not even going to give you a limited no trade, no move. So if you're asking me to trade you, then you waive it completely. And so he's waived it with regard to the Islanders. Elliot Friedman has reported they spent considerable time on this and weren't able to make the math work because Andrew Ladd's got, that's a lot of dead money too in the minors. Mm-hmm. So I love Zach, but I'm not thinking poor Zach. They weren't able to move him. If he wants out, then what I would say is the GM has waived the whole clause.
Are these no moves? I mean, you guys hand them out, so they exist, but are these no moves pains in the asses more than anything else sometimes when it comes down to crunch time and wanting to move a guy, Berkey? Like, how many times have you regretted it?
I've never given a full no trade, no move, I'm pretty sure. I can't recall ever doing it because I think it binds you so severely. I think the most I ever gave was a no-fly zone for 8 or 10 teams. So a player could say, I don't want to go here or there, but then I still got 20 teams to deal with. I'm going to be able to move them. So if to my knowledge, and again, I'm thinking real hard here, I think we gave Mark Giordano a full no-trade, no-move for the first couple years of his contract, but I don't think we gave a full no-trade, no-move. I'm pretty sure I didn't ever. And yeah, they're gigantic pain in the ass, and they usually work against the player's best interest. So, like, I've never understood why players really want one. I'm like, really? So things are terrible here. And what I say is, I won't play you then. You have a full no trade, no move unless you waive it. You're not dressing again. It says I can't trade you. It doesn't say I have to dress you. Hmm. That's the discussion we had with Thomas Coverley. He had a full no trade, no move, and I told his agent, I don't really care. He's not going to play. Give me some teams or he doesn't play. So I don't think they're working the player's best interest if push comes to shove, but I also think if you have an intelligent agent, when you get to that point, it's possible to work around those. But I'm amazed that teams give them out. I'm amazed that teams give full no trade, no moves. Just don't do it. Give them a no-fly zone.
What do you think about the Ottawa centers and the moves they made? Are they, moving on from Pageau, Nemestikov? Do you think they're any closer, or is it still more than a couple of years away before they start to, make a dent in the league, make a run for it?
Well, you got to be one confident GM to do what Pierre Dorion did this week. Because everything he's got is, except maybe the first two picks in this draft, everything's 1, 2, 3 or more years away. Like, you could have 9 picks in this draft or whatever, crazy. But he's done a great job. You got to be really confident because a lot of these assets aren't going to show up and produce for 1, 2, 3, 4 years. And I don't know too many GMs who think they're guaranteed to be there in 3 years and can wait for a bunch of second-round picks to turn into players. So what he's done is remarkable. He got a great return on all these things, but I'm not sure they're going to be any better next year or the year after. I mean, even if they break into 18-year-olds, look at Jack Hughes this year. Mm-hmm. So he's playing for New Jersey. You know, look at Capo Caco. They're playing as 18-year-olds. They're doing squat.
Mm-hmm.
They're doing what 18-year-olds do in a man's league. They're struggling. So to me, this is wonderful. If I'm a season ticket holder in Ottawa, I am ecstatic. But I'm like, can't we turn some of this future into the present? Can't we get some players now? And that's what I really thought they would re-sign Pageau. I thought he should stay. They re-signed Shabbat. But once I heard the return that they got for Pageau, I'm like, okay, that makes sense.
Yeah.
But if I'm a season ticket holder, I'm like, okay, so where am I going to go to watch these picks? They're going to go back to junior. They're going to go back to Europe, most of them. So where am I going to go to watch them? They're not going to be at the Canadian Tire Center. So I'm going to go to Belleville to watch them. I'm going to go to Kingston to watch them. I'm going to go to Stockholm to watch them because they ain't going to be here. The first two guys might be. They're picking San Jose's pick. They might play right away, but the other guys aren't going to.